There we go. I got it all figured out. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. This is the truth about sales. And not to rub it in, but I thought I'd let you know I'm hosting this call from lovely Honolulu, Hawaii, literally standing on the beach. So I don't know if that's significant, but I'm not in my normal environment. I don't have very good Wi-Fi. The cell signal here is so-so at best, so forgive me in advance if I'm staticky or problematic. I trust it's going to be fine. And congratulations, we got through all the heavy lifting. We're at the place in the call now that I think is the most fun. So we're at the place where all the heavy lifting that you've done should be paying off. And all the tools and techniques that you've learned so far, we're going to put them into play in a new way. And most people believe that this is the starting this week, that the class gets much easier and much more fun and much more dynamic. You've already done all the exercise, right? Like Kung Fu. We've been sparring. We've been playing long enough. Now it's time to spar a little bit. So with that in mind, let's get jumping in. We are starting today the beginning of objection handling. What the heck are we talking about? Objection handling, what does that mean? Well, again, objections are just, you know, a difference of opinion sometimes. So let's start by looking, well, we're going to start by doing a few things. We're going to look at how do we process objections, meaning, like, what's the significance in you when somebody throws an objection at you? Do you take that as a personal assault, or are you excited that's a new opportunity to get connected, right? So how do you process those? What do those mean to you? What kind of emotional space do they put you in? And then we're going to take on a couple of different tools and techniques today on how to do that, how to reframe them, how to give them a new context, how to make sure that we're all on the same page so our responses are moving towards agreement instead of arguing and making people wrong and conflict, right? We're going to dissolve all of that today. What else? And then we're going to take on a new rapport theme. So before we jump in and get all sweaty, any ahas, any breakthroughs, anything from last week? Remember, last week was cause and effect. This caused that. The simple fact that you see this comp means it's time to lower the price. The fact that you've been on the market for 8 months with no sales proves what you're doing isn't working. Shall we try something new? Right? Cause and effect. And our rapport theme last week was the cause of body language. What's causing them to do this? Why are they walking that way? Why are they limping? What are they doing? Why are they tapping their foot? What's driving that behavior? Okay, so any questions, any ahas, any breakthroughs, anything from last week that you'd like to share or ask or dissolve or anything? Star 6 on your phone, say your name. And let's hear what happened from last week. Where did you get to use it? Where did you get to practice it? Where did you hear it in the media? Anything at all before we jump into new stuff? Yeah, no questions, no ahas, no
problems,
no magic from last week, yes.
Joel?
Yes.
Yeah, question. I was a few seconds late. You may have covered this. This is Jim Stengel from San Diego.
Hey, Jim.
I've been trying to, you know, somehow this was my goof up to not download everything before, but how do I get the past stuff?
Oh, so I'm supposed to give you guys a little announcement. I totally spaced out about it. Thanks for the reminder. The marketing team was doing some new marketing something, and they got such a big response, they collapsed the website. The joelrico.com website was down for a bit. It should be all up now. You should have access to anything that's come to you. If you missed one, you should still have access to everything. If not, he's probably going to hate me for saying this, but if not, feel free to send an email directly to Ryan, R-Y-A-N, Ryan, at medium rare media, com. In fact, you've probably gotten emails from him already. And if you can't get access to something, if you're not getting in, if you're having a problem, if you send that email to me, I send it to him. So feel free to send it to him if you're not getting access to something you should have access to. And
right,
the site was down for several days, and it's all back up and running now. Everything should be working perfectly right now.
Thank you.
Joel?
You're welcome. Yes.
Joel, this is Debbie. I don't know if other people are having trouble, but I can barely hear you. The people that are coming in, I can hear them perfectly, but you are like a whisper.
Oh, really? Okay, let me adjust my microphone, and I'm on a different headset today, and I have a spare one in my pocket. So is that any better?
No.
Am I better? Am I louder? Or do I need to change headsets?
I can hardly hear you.
Really? So let me check in with some other people. Is that true for other people, or is that just for Debbie? Am I loud and clear for others, or am I quiet for everybody?
I can hear you fine, Joel.
Fine, in Salt Lake, I can hear you.
Okay, so Debbie, maybe it's your line of working for a bunch of other people. Maybe
okay.
You're pretty quiet here in Sacramento, too, Joel.
Yeah, Joel, you're kind of quiet, and then everyone else is super loud.
Yeah, that's what I'm experiencing
quiet,
also.
And everybody else is super loud. Interesting. All right, so I'm going to try this. So bear with me, everybody. We're going to do a little experiment. So I'm on a noise-canceling headset right now, which is really my favorite. And I'm going to switch to a non-noise-canceling headset that hopefully will be cleaner and clearer. I don't know. And I will let all of you decide. So bear with me, everybody. Sorry for the technical delays. Alrighty. All right, swapping headsets now. Tell me what you guys think of this. All right, is this better? Is this worse? Testing, testing.
Much better.
I can hear you perfectly now.
Much better. Okay, good.
Yep.
Yeah, much better.
Look at that. All right, so we have evolved. We are officially using the It Came Free With My Phone Apple headset. Son of a gun. I have a special little noise-canceling headset that I travel with, a little portable travel one that sometimes gets complaints. So sorry for the background noise, and I'll talk loud and stay away from noisy people. All right, admin aside. Aha, thanks for that, everybody, by the way. Thanks for giving me the download on how that's working or not working. So questions, comments, ahas. Any ahas from last week? Any breakthroughs from last week? Anything you want to share? Anything at all? Any questions? Any problems? Any place you were stuck? Any places where you noticed people's the cause of their body language? Any of that? Anything at all before we do new stuff today? No last week stuff. Okay, fair enough.
Hey, Joel, this is Danette, and what I started to notice was people on the street, and I would take a look at how they were walking and how they were holding themselves, and I got to notice that besides a limp, I got to see where probably the limp was originating from, so it was a learning opportunity to look deeper into what I was seeing, so I just thought
awesome.
I would share that.
And what did you notice from the limp? I mean, hey, it's a knee, it's a hip, it's an ankle.
You know, exactly. You could, when I looked more closely, I could see where they were placing more emphasis, or you could see where they were, like, guarding themselves in certain areas more. So I felt it to be a valuable exercise just in observation.
Yeah,
and I guess it took me from understanding it's a limp to an understanding that this pain is coming from a more local area, and I just appreciated noticing that more.
Awesome. Now, so thank you for sharing that. So everybody else, that I get how that might seem like a silly exercise, right? Why are we watching people limp? Who cares? I got stuff to sell. I got goals to hit. I got houses to sell. I got price reductions to get. I need contracts signed. I don't care if that person limps. I'm gonna sell their house whether they limp or don't limp. So what? How's that significant? Well, the truth of it is that if you want to be legendary in the world of sales, it requires a very keen sense of observation. You need to, you know, listen to people deeply, like really get the details. How does that happen? That happens by opening up our sensory acuity. Sensory acuity means hearing, seeing, sensing, perceiving. So these are just exercises. So when you're, you know, when you're at the closing table or when you're at the kitchen table talking to somebody about selling or buying or whatever, and you're not paying attention, they might have some signs of resistance. They might have some signs of distress. They might exhibit some behavior that is a closing hint. They might be giving you buying signals that you're missing. In fact, I guarantee they're giving you buying signals that you're missing. Or they might be giving you, like, shutdown signals that you're missing. And these exercises are training you to look past the obvious, to see what's going on with people, see what's causing their behavior, really, like, understand the physiology, the kinesiology, the psychology, really wrap your mind around what's going on with this person. Remember, houses don't pay commissions. People pay commissions, right? Houses don't hire you. People hire you. So the more we can understand people and their what's driving them and what's making them work or not work, the easier this becomes. You start seeing people's signs of stress early, then we can address them. Start figuring out their closing signs early, then you stop talking and go to the close. So these are key elements. Thank you so much for sharing that. That was awesome. Anybody else? A win, a breakthrough, an aha, anything from last week before we jump into new stuff? All right. So as usual, let's do a new level of the rapport game. So last week was, well, 2 weeks ago was body language. Watch their body language, mirror and match their body language. Last week, see, without the noise-canceling headphones, I think you just heard that motorcycle go ripping by, and maybe you did. So last week, we did cause of body language. What's causing them to do that? This week, one step even deeper. This week, we are going to notice and count and get in rhythm with their breathing. So is your client breathing short and shallow? What's that a sign of? I don't know, anxiety usually, or maybe emphysema. typically anxiety. If somebody's breathing way up here and they're talking way up here and they're not taking full deep breaths, and right, something's going on. There's some sign of anxiety, some nervousness. Something's happening because they're way up here. Versus if your client is taking long, slow, complete, deep breaths and they're moving slowly and intentionally like this, that's a completely different client. Well, that client's in a completely different space. So one of the deepest things that we can do to structure agreement with a stranger is to get in sync with their breathing. And just like we did with rate of speech and volume and the other elements of rapport, the goal here is to figure out what is their rate, get in harmony with their rate, match it, and then once you match it, just like volume, once you match it, everybody starts to feel comfortable. And then once you start to feel comfortable in this new space, you'll notice they are feeling comfortable in this new space. And then you can very slowly, very gently, and automatically, you don't even have to think about it, you will naturally migrate back to what is normal for you. And the two of you will find an equilibrium. This is the goal, right? So if you have a client that's like, okay, and then what are we going to do? And then the house is over here. And then, oh, my God, look at the payments. And then, oh, my God, look at all the stuff we have to fix. What about this, honey? Right? And they're not really breathing very well. So what do you do? I want to get in rapport with those people and say, I know, I did when I bought my first house, me too. I know it feels like a big undertaking. I know it's going to feel stressful in the beginning. I got it. Right? So I just want to get in rapport as deep as I can on as many fronts as I can. All right, that's it. Mirror and match their breathing until it starts to feel natural, and then find equilibrium. Why? Why do we do this? It's a lot of work for you. It's a crazy amount of work for you. Lots of stuff to focus on. Why are we doing all this? Because it makes the customer feel at ease. Makes your client feel at home. Remember, in every conversation, somebody's going to be a little bit uneasy, uncomfortable. I'm requesting that you volunteer for the position. Let the client be comfortable. All right, any questions, comments, anything about that?
Joel?
Yes.
It sounds like you're saying that if they're like breathing fast and they're anxious, that you should match that. And to me, that's counterintuitive.
Yes, I am.
If they're really
anxious,
it
is counterintuitive.
I would think that me being calm and putting them at ease would make them feel more comfortable than both of us are really super anxious.
Yeah, it is counterintuitive. And I'm saying to match them such that they know that you understand them just for a minute. Then, as you relax out of it, you're going to pull them towards calm. So let me give you an example. So all of you married people, and your spouse is freaking out. Oh, my God, this is wrong, and this isn't happening. Oh, what are we going to do? This right? And the spouse says, it's okay, honey. Calm down. Everything's going to be fine, right? It almost feels patronizing because you're so far apart. What is it that will calm down the person who's having anxiety? What calms them down the fastest is you get in sync with them first. Oh, my God, that is wrong. Holy moly, what are we going to do about that? Okay, we're going to make it. All right, take a deep breath. All right, yeah, I got it. Right? So we're going to use this as a very short tool to get connected first. Just as a tool for connection. You're right. If you stayed here, if you stayed anxious and all spun up, if you stayed there, yeah, you'd eventually add to it. We're only going to do it for 30 seconds or something short. Just so they get that you're on the same team, they'll get very clearly that, oh, okay, it's calming to them to know that you hear them. Does that help at all, or can that confuse you more?
Yeah, no, that makes it much clearer.
Okay, good. Another really great example is for any of you that have really little children, if you have a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old that's having a temper tantrum, like full-blown temper tantrum, laying on the floor, screaming, pounding their fists, what are they doing? Well, that's the best they have in the moment. They're frustrated. They feel like nobody's hearing them. And what are you doing? Come on, honey. It's okay. Come on. It's okay. Come on. Come on. Right? You're trying to calm them down. And the more you try to calm them down, the more they freak out. So what do you do about that? Well, get down on the floor and scream and pound your fists right next to them. Do it with them. I know that seems crazy. And what's going to happen is they're going to stop dead in their tracks. And they're going to spin over and look at you like, oh, my God, you can hear me. And it will stop them dead in their tracks. Why? Because all of a sudden they feel like, oh, I'm not alone. Wow, somebody's on my team here. And it'll just break through instantly. So that's why we do that. Thank you for asking that question. See, those questions, like, spur really good stuff. All right. Any other questions, or should we jump in and do some objection handling? Going once, going twice? All right. So let's jump in and talk about some objections real quick. So from your handout, most of us think of objections that the client is disagreeing with something, right? Like they do in court, right? I object. That's not true, Your Honor. Right, that's when I hear objections, this is mostly how we think about them. That's not always the case. So The issue, however, was thinking about objections from that perspective, right? I object, that's not true. Oh, yeah, well, I think you're guilty. So thinking about objections like this, like attorneys, like courts, it forces us to think about them from a place of right or wrong, win or lose, guilty or innocent. And that's not the way it is, especially in our line of work. In sales, it's not right or wrong, true or false, guilty or innocent. It's not that way. So the problem, though, with thinking about objections from the place of right or wrong, good or bad, is inside the construct of good or bad, right or wrong, if you prove yourself to be right, you make the client wrong and you hurt the relationship. I see this happen a lot. I hear this happen a lot when salespeople, especially in the real estate frame, are talking about price, right? The customer says, well, I'd like 500. And you go, well, I'd love 500 too, but are you kidding me? Look at this. These houses are selling at 400. There's no way we're going to get 500. The one right there just sold at 400. Let me show you the numbers that prove that 400 is right. Let me show you that I'm right. Listen to, trust me, look at this. 400 is the right number. And you can spend an hour proving to the customer that you're right. You probably are right. But what just happened to the customer? You proved them wrong. What just happened to the relationship? You're right, they're wrong, they feel like crap. You hurt the relationship doing that. So instead of viewing objections as right and wrong, right, I think that's a trap. Instead of having them be right and wrong, we want to look at them in a whole new way. So that's what we're going to take on today. There's no right and wrong. There's just different ways of looking at it. So that's what we're taking on today. So a couple of questions just to get us started. What is the most challenging objection that you receive? Right, there's only like 10 or 15 objections in this line of work. Which one's the hardest one for you? Would somebody be willing to share with me? Star 6, hi. Unmute, come in here and tell me. Which one's the hardest for you? Yes.
In lead generating, the hardest one is, I don't want to sell it anymore. I'm taking it off the market. We're not putting it back on. We've changed our mind.
Okay, that was 4. We don't want to sell it. We're taking it off the market. We're changing our mind, right? That was a lot of justification for one objection. So stay with me. Question number 2 is, why do you think this particular objection is so difficult for you?
For me personally?
Yes, for you. Why? I said, which is the most challenging objection for you? You said this one. Why this one is the hardest for you?
Because it ends. There's nowhere to go from there. If you don't want me, where do we go from here? How do I tell
gotcha.
You how great I am if you don't have any, you say you don't have any need for my service?
Hmm. And there's no space for me to tell you how great I am if you don't need a great person like me. So I'm stuck.
Right.
So why do you think that, do you think that every time, I trust that you're calling expired. Is this where you're getting it?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so do you feel that when people say this to you, nope, we're taking it off the market, we've decided not to sell, do you think that everybody who says that to you is being truthful?
I know they're not.
You know they're not. Okay, so sometimes it's a smokescreen, it's a stall tactic, it's a diversion, yes?
Yes.
Okay, last question. Why do you think that people are giving you this smokescreen?
Because we're not in rapport?
Could be a lot of things. That's probably the most obvious.
They want to get me off the phone?
Could be a lot of things, right? Maybe they're not ready. Maybe you're not in rapport. Maybe they had some clown from another company that was just a jerk to them 5 minutes ago, and you just happened to be at the right place at the right time and be the next call they got.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a test because their last agent was not very dynamic and present and couldn't handle themselves in conflict, and maybe they're just trying to see how you handle these. Maybe it's a screen to see if you got what it takes. Right, I have no idea. So one of the things that I'd like all of you to consider, thank you for sharing that,
And I just wanted to say the other thing is sure. like their tone of voice is very, you know, angry and it feels like they want to get
yeah.
off the phone. So it's like so not relaxed. They're like, you know, do you still want to sell your house? No. You know, so it's like really hard to get anything going. It's not like an objection that I can handle. That everything's
okay,
going
so,
on. Right, but we have one objection.
All right, so hang on. We're language-based here. So instead of saying it's hard to get something going and I have nowhere to go and I can't handle these, let's just reframe the way you're saying that. I've not been successful at these in the past. I'd like a new way to solve these. I feel frustrated and I'm willing to study a better way. It's challenging and I'm up for a challenge, right? There's a way around everything.
Right.
So, and let me give you one more example that's going to be universal for everybody, and then we'll jump in. So consider when you were new. For those of you that have been selling real estate less than a year or so, you're still hearing, well, how long have you been licensed? How many homes have you sold in my area? How many homes have you sold in my price range? Like, do you have some history that you can show me? Anybody who's been selling houses more than 5 or 10 years, notice you're not getting that objection anymore. Why? Why is it? Now, this might seem silly or trite. Why is it that new agents get the objection? Well, how long have you been licensed? And veteran agents don't get that question any longer. Right? Do you think Chris Heller, you know, Ben Kinney, do you think Ben Kinney, I don't think he goes to listing appointments anymore, but do you think when one of those guys goes to a listing appointment, or me, when I go to a listing appointment, do you think that the seller says to me, well, how long have you been selling houses? How long have you been doing this?
Hey, Joel, it's Jason from New Jersey.
Yes, please.
To answer the question, I've only been in real estate for, I don't know, 2.5, 3 years. My wife, however, has been in it for, we'll be polite and call it decades. One of the things I noticed when I'm with her on a listing appointment is no one asks me how long I've been in industry. When I'm not with her, they still don't ask me. And a big part of that, from what I've seen, is, compared to other agents, how you carry yourself and how you act. If you
exactly.
don't know something, it's... I say, I don't know it. Let me look it up. And they look at you and it's like, well, every town's different. I want to make sure I give you the right information. Oh, okay.
Perfectly described. So what I hear in that description is that your behavior, nothing else, your behavior triggers the seller. And your behavior either generates the objection, how long have you been selling houses, or it doesn't. It's you. It's always you. It's always me. If my behavior is lacking in confidence, the seller's going to say, well, how long have you been doing this? Right? That's a sign of uncertainty. Right? If you're going in for open heart surgery and the guy is, you know, chewing gum and texting his girlfriend and looking up something on Google, you're going to go, hey, doc, have you done this before? Right? That's a sign of uncertainty. And so why are the sellers giving you whatever objection they're giving you? Because something that you're saying or doing is causing it. Right, let that sink in a bit. You are causing the objections that you're getting. If you are not comfortable with pricing, then you're going to get pricing objections. If you are uncomfortable with commission, you are going to get commission objections. Let that sink in. You are causing them. All right, so what are we going to do about that? Well, the truth is that the process of selling is a contribution. We want to leave the client in a better place. And a new context for objections. We want to view the objections from a new space, meaning that instead of right and wrong, left and right, good and bad, I just want to invite you to view the objections as a question. Client has a question. Now, it doesn't always sound like a question. Right? Hey, the other guy said they do it for 4% and you want 6. What the hell? That doesn't sound like a question. It is a question. What that really means is, wow, they don't say it this way, but here's how I hear it. Well, I don't really understand how the other agent is offering at 4% and you're offering at 6%. Why is that? Because I'm interested in you. Otherwise, they'd say, hey, there's the door. So I'm interested in you, and I don't get why you're so much more money. So I want to hear their objections, regardless of the delivery. I want to hear it as a question. So a couple of really super fast things. What does the client mean when they say, hey, will you cut the commission? What do they really mean? What are they really asking? Where's that coming from? Well, that could be a lot of things. Will you cut the commission? It might mean that they believe a lower commission means a higher net. And so they want a higher net. And so they're asking you for a lower cost of a commission, maybe. And what else could it mean? It could mean that this person is a discount hunter. They're a coupon cutter. That's just how they operate. It could mean that they're from a country that negotiates everything. And this is how we do it. We ask, I ask, you ask, we go back and forth, we find a place in the middle that we're happy, that's how we do things. It could mean that. It could be a test. Hey, will you cut the commission? Maybe they want to see how you handle dealing with objections. You're about to be representing their estate, their biggest investment. They want to just see what you're all about. Maybe they're confused. They don't know. What do you do for 6%? It's a $500,000 house. Why I'm going to write you a personal check for, you're going to put $30,000 in your pocket to sell my house. Right? They don't know how it works. Maybe they're just confused. Maybe they were told to ask. Hey, whatever you do, make sure you ask. Right? It doesn't hurt to ask. Just ask. Hey, would you do it for less? So my point is, when somebody gives you this objection, or any objection, this example is, will you cut the commission? What do they really mean? What do they really mean? I have no idea. I have no idea which one they mean. So that's the problem. Maybe it's a control thing. Maybe the seller's trying to strong arm you and like control the conversation. So the problem is I don't have any idea what they really mean when they do this. So challenge number one in the objection is to make sure we understand the client's position. If you are not 100% crystal clear, ask. Say, what do you mean by that? What's your intention? Could you say more about that? Or remember on, I don't know, week 3 or 4, we did level shifting. So if they say, hey, will you cut the commission? You could say, well, I appreciate you bringing that up. And I think the real question is that we get you a higher net. Is that what you want? Right? And level shift it to something to where at least we're talking about the same thing. All right, those are some tools. All right, so today we're doing two things. We're doing a very basic, most basic response pattern. That should be really fun. And we're doing, what else are we doing? Dun, dun, dun. Oh, we're doing what's this? Oh, that's a good one too. So our most basic response pattern is...
Hi, Joel.
Yes.
Amanda here in Washington. I wanted to jump in there when it comes to the pricing, you know, kind of negotiating the commission. Is it also possible that they haven't seen your worth? Like you haven't shown enough value for you to justify charging 6%? So maybe going back over the values would help?
Well, it could be. That could be one of the things that they're using as a justification for, will you cut the commission? It could be. However, in that particular one, I think the danger zone is that's what most agents think by default. And so a very common mistake is, let's say, for example, the seller is from a culture that negotiates everything. And so the seller is a negotiator, and they say, hey, will you cut the commission? If you're not clear the seller's reason, then you default to thinking, hey, well, obviously the seller doesn't see my value. Then the conversation goes like this. The seller says, hey, we negotiate everything. Hey, would you cut the commission? And you say, hey, let me show you my marketing plan. Oh, I do this and I do that. Let me show you what I'm up to here. And so while the seller's bringing up commission, you're now talking about marketing plans. Now, I don't know if that's the seller's reason for this objection or not. I don't know. But it could be.
Okay.
It could be.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So my cautionary tale to all of you is make sure that you know either. You know what the seller means when they say, will you cut the commission? I want to know why they're asking that. What's significant? What are they trying to do? What's their intention? Where's it coming from? Or level shift it to something that I do know the meaning of. Hey, I totally get that you want to reduce commission, and it sounds like you want to make as much profit as possible. Great, let's talk about your net profit. Right? Level shift it up to something that we do know, or at least we're on the same page. All right, we're going to do two specific techniques today. The first one is a very easy response pattern. I like to call it Objection Handling 101. And it's three very basic steps. Step one is repeat and approve. That is no different than all this rapport we've been doing all along, right? No matter what they say, I want them to know that I heard them. So, and what they say, hey, will you cut the commission? I don't want to go, oh, you don't love me, what? Right? I'm picking a fight. I didn't demonstrate that I heard them. Instead, hey, will you cut the commission? I want to start by saying, the commission, yes, thank you for bringing that up. Great question. Let's talk about that. Right? I just want to demonstrate, number one, I'm in rapport. I'm responding with some sort of agreement. Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Right? I want to demonstrate that I'm on their side and demonstrate that I heard them. Okay, that's step number one. And there's a list of example words in there. Great, fantastic, you're correct. Hey, that's a great question, thank you. Right? Demonstrate we're on the same page. Step two, answer their question. Give them a new perspective. Give them a new definition. Answer or address their objection such that it gets removed as a reason for not moving forward. Right? The rest of today and the next 2 weeks completely are all about step two. Right? I just want to put it in the framework, and then we'll spend all of our time on step two. Then, after step two, we're going to remove their problem, we're going to answer their question, and they're going to go, oh, okay, good, I see it that way. The goal in step two is to generate agreement from the customer. Oh, okay, that makes sense, I got it. And then step three, the moment you hear agreement in step two, you move to step three, which is, great, let's take a step forward. Great, let's sign the contract. Great, let's sign it right now. Great, let's put it on the market today. Great, let's lower the price. Perfect, let's do that. So this is the most basic frame. No matter what the client says, I hate realtors. I'm going to say, great, I totally get that you hate them. I do too. I got to work with them all the time. They're a pain in the neck. Trust me. And then step two, give them a new answer. Give them a new meaning. Give them a new perspective. Yeah, I know realtors are a pain in the neck. I know. It's why I got licensed, because they were a pain in the neck for me too. I was buying and selling a property, and they were a pain in the neck. I got licensed just so I could do it for me and didn't have to deal with them. I know they are. And I got one on the other side of every one of my transactions. They're a bunch of work. So I'm going to guarantee that you have a smooth transaction, and I'm not like one of those pain-in-the-neck agents that you've run into before. And the seller goes, whew, wow, that's a relief. Great, I'm glad that you see it that way. So let's go ahead and sign the contract and get your house on the market and get you moved to Montana. All right, that's it. The frame is three steps. Step one is basically agreement. Agreement and rapport, right? That's repeat and approve. Step two, answer the question. Give them a new framework. Give them a new perspective. And as soon as they go, oh, great, that's awesome, then you move to step three, perfect. Should we sign the contract right now and have the house go live today, or do you want the weekend? We'll have it go live on Monday. All right, there's one extra, so before I do that, is everybody clear? Any questions, any comments about that? Cool. Basic, super easy three steps.
So, Joel,
yes.
back my objection. So you're on the phone. He doesn't want to be on the phone with you. It's not like you're in his living room. And he says, no, I'm taking my house off the market. Is it difficult to say, well, tell me a little bit more about that, you know?
Well, you're asking him to give you something, and you haven't generated rapport yet. You're going to say, oh, I got it. After 6 months on the market and no sale, I would be frustrated too. You should be frustrated. Like, I haven't even gone anywhere. All I've done was take his side.
Okay.
So already, do you think he's going to be in a better position?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you
were skipping step one.
Okay.
Right. So step one is, yeah, I totally get it. I would be frustrated too. I would be so frustrated. I would be hanging up on people and taking my house off the market too, if my last agent drugged me over the coals for 6 months with no results. You should be upset. I'm very sorry to hear that you're in that position. Then, once we made some sense of rapport, I'm curious. Would you be willing to share with me what went wrong? I mean, I'm looking at the photos. The house looks great. What do you think happened that didn't work? Or, I don't know, if there was a way that you could still get sold and still move and not have to go through 6 months of torture again, would you even consider the possibility of moving if you could get your house sold? Right, I'm just going to want to enroll them in some sort of possibility. And if he goes, well, I'd consider selling, but, you know, I'm clear it's not going to sell. I'd still like to sell. Right, it's just that was an opening. Was that helpful?
Very.
Very. Okay, good. All right, so really briefly, I usually skip this step, but I'm going to throw it at you really quick. Really briefly, there is a fourth step. So that was three steps. Step one, repeat the prove. Step two, answer their question. Step three, ask for the sale. There's an optional step 1.5. What some people do is they teach a thing called isolating the sale. So isolating means, you know, besides, let's say you're at the closing table and the seller says, you know, this all sounds good, but there's no way in hell I'm paying 6%. No way. You say, okay, hey, I totally got it. You don't want to pay a 6% commission. I get it. I totally understand. That was step one, repeat and approve. Step 1.5, isolate. Other than the commission, is there any other reason that's preventing you from signing the contract right now? And the guy goes, no, you're awesome. I'm just not paying the commission. Okay, what did I just find out? I know it's only the commission. If I solve the commission, we sign the contract. So that's kind of helpful. Or the seller could say, well, you know, it's the commission plus this other thing. Right? So I'm isolating the seller's objections to put them in a box. Is it just one? Is it two? What is it that I have to deal with? So it can be clarifying. That's the good side. The downside is, for me, it always feels like a sales trick. It always feels like a trap. It feels like I'm painting them in a corner. And I would rather take them through this 1-2-3-step process two or three times if they have two or three issues, because I want all of their issues to be addressed, because it's not my intention to close them. It's my intention to build a relationship where they want to work with me. All right. Questions, comments, anything? All right, let's do a quick example. The house says, hey, my house is special. Client says, my house is special. I want $650. Then you, step one, repeat and approve. We're going to say something like, yeah, your house is great. I'd love to get you $650 or even more. That would be great. That was step one. Step two, answer their question. Give them a new perspective. Shine the light on another angle, something. Step two here, this example, not a script, just an option. Step two says, I'm curious. If the new owner, if the newer house down on the corner is available at $550 and it's newer, why would a buyer pay $100,000 more for your house? And if they would, could we get an appraisal at this value? So what am I doing? I'm asking. I'm not telling. I'm not making them wrong. I'm asking. Now the client's going to say something like, holy, I never thought about it like that.
I didn't really think about it like that. I didn't think about the appraisal. I didn't think about it from the being in the shoes of the buyer. There's an advantage you have because you get to see the buy side and the sell side. So then when the seller says, wow, holy moly, I never considered that, then we move to step three. Yeah, it's not me or even you who gets to set the values. It's the market and the buyers. Now, this is just a little truth about sales, couple of tools here. Naturally, you're beginning to realize, what is that? Some presuppositions. Naturally, you're beginning to realize we must list the house, embedded command, at a price that will cause it to sell. Let's sign the contract, embedded command, and get you to Colorado in time to start the kids in the new school year. So this is it. Step one, two, three. My house is special. Yes, it is. I'd like to get you that and more. And look at it this way. Why would they pay more? And how do we get an appraisal? Oh, I never thought about it like that. I know. It's not me or you. It's the buyers. And this is what we have to do to get you sold. Let's get you sign the contract, right? That one, two, three, step one, step two, step three, sometimes is all you need. All right. Before we get to the next technique, questions, comments, anything? Awesome. We beat that to death. Everybody understands it clearly. Yay. All right, next technique. This one's kind of fun. So this one is called, this is the entire name of the technique. It should actually say, I'm curious, comma, what specifically caused you to believe? So this technique is designed to find the client's underlying beliefs on a subject so that you, me, we can better understand their position. Right? If a client says, hey, my house is special and I should get $100,000 more, I'm going to say, I totally get that. Yes. Step one, yes, your house is special. It's gorgeous. I get it. And step two, I'm curious, what specifically causes you to believe that a buyer would pay $100,000 more for this house than that house? And then whoosh, be quiet and let the silence do the heavy lifting. One of two things is about to happen. Either the seller is going to go like, I didn't think about it like that. I don't know what, right? And the seller is going to be stumped. Or, and the seller will be enlightened. Or, once in a while, if you're lucky, you will be the one who gets enlightened. The seller might say something like, well, that house down the corner, that house that house is listed at $550, but it's only on a quarter acre lot. I should get $650. I'm on a 2 acre lot. All this land, this all included. This is my yard. I'm on 2 acres. Once in a while, you'll be, oh, I didn't get that. Everything in the neighborhood is a quarter acre. I didn't get that you were 2 acres. Once in a while, you will be the one who gets enlightened. So the goal of this technique is to find the client's underlying beliefs. Now, if the client says, I want $650 and all the comps are $550, I want to know why. What specifically causes you to believe a buyer would pay $100,000 more for your house than that one? Maybe the seller will say, well, because I have new carpet. Okay, now how much easier is it to solve? Now it's easy. You want new carpet? Great, that's $10,000. Okay, so why is a buyer going to pay $100,000 for $10,000 in carpet? Right, it's easy to solve when we know where the seller's coming from. Right, well, they should pay $100,000 more for my house because, you know, mine has a view of the freeway. I mean, I back right up to the freeway. I can just look over the back fence and see it. Right? So not only what's more important for me is not their objection, it's their why behind the objection. What specifically causes you to believe whatever it is that you believe? All right, a few examples, and then we'll just play with these for a bit. Example number one says, we want a lower commission rate. And then we're going to say, I totally get it. This is step one. Step one, I understand. Saving money is something I'll try to do. Step one. Step two, I'm wondering what specifically causes you to believe offering less commission will attract more agents and buyers. I didn't really see it. I didn't really think about it like that. Right? And then what did you do? We just changed their position on something. Great. Now, what would step three be? Any way you feel like closing, that would be a good step three. Maybe some single binds. You know, the more agents and buyers we get to see the house, the more we can get a competitive market and maybe a competitive bid, and the more we can drive up the price. Does that sound like a good idea? Yeah, I'd love to drive up the price. Great, but let's price it competitively. Example number two. Look, I can't move into real estate. This is for recruiting. I can't move into real estate. I need my steady salary. I'm a single parent. Like, if I don't get my $1,200 every 2 weeks, I'm stuck. I'm curious. What specifically causes you to believe you won't make enough money to no longer be dependent on a paycheck? So what are we doing? I don't want to make anybody wrong. This is the key in objection handling. Most of us look at it as right and wrong. Well, that's stupid. You can make more money over here, right? We get busy making people wrong. Instead, I want to question why do you think that? What specifically causes you to believe XYZ? And I want to enroll the seller, the client, into supporting their beliefs. Next example, this is for you or for your kids. You know what? I'm just too busy to do my homework. I don't have time to do this homework. The truth about sales, 20 minutes a day. I don't have 20 minutes a day. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I know. My time's important too. I'm confused. What specifically causes you to believe that you'll improve your skills, that improving your skills won't make you less busy? Right? What am I doing? I'm saying, yes, I totally get it. It's hard to make time. Get in rapport, find some agreement. Then, step two, what specifically causes you to believe? Wow, I'm sitting here on the beach, right on the street on the beach, and somebody's just rolling by in about a $3 million, that's a 1959 Mercedes SL Roadster convertible, convertible. Oh, that is the Roadster. Wow, that's about a $2 million car. Goodness. Okay, sorry about that. Last example. Look, I always vote Republican, right? I'm a Republican. I vote the party line. I always vote Republican. I usually say, look, I totally can appreciate your loyalty. That's awesome. And I'm curious what specifically causes you to believe that blind allegiance to any party, any doctrine, any philosophy keeps you objective and open-minded. I say the same thing if they say, look, I'm a Democrat. I always vote Democrat. Well, I totally appreciate your loyalty. And what specifically caused you to believe that blind allegiance to any party keeps you open-minded and objective? So I want to do this in a way that's nice, that's enrolling, that's inquisitive. That's why I like to start with, I'm curious, I'm wondering, I'm confused. I don't want to make people wrong. I want to understand them. All right, we got a whole 4 or 5 minutes left. Questions, comments. Ahas, breakthroughs, objections that you'd like to play with, anything. Next week, we're doing a couple of extraordinarily powerful step two techniques. So this week, practice step one, step two, step three. What are those? Step one, hey, I totally agree. That's a great point. Thanks for bringing it up. I get it. Step two, what if we looked at it from this? Have you considered it this way? What if we try this? What caused you to believe that? Right? Step two is change their perspective. Ask them a new question. Answer their question. Enroll them in a new outcome. Something. Step three, great. Let's sign the contract. Move forward. All right, questions, comments, ahas, anything at all?
Joel?
Yes.
One of the challenging objections in pricing is when they're illogical. and they're like,
yes,
I want $100,000 because, you know, we use gold screws. And you know that nobody's going to pay $100,000 for screws.
Yeah.
But they believe in their mind and their, you know, they put their heart and soul and sweat into this renovation, and they're not going to listen to reason.
Oh, wait, hold on, hold on. That's the smartest thing I've heard anybody say. They, the clients, are not going to listen to reason. Correct. I'm going to make that even more simple. They, the clients, are not going to listen. It's true. They're not going to listen, which is why I make it my intention to not tell them anything, because they don't listen. So what choice do you have? Ask better questions. Mr. and Mrs. Seller, that's awesome. I've been selling real estate a long time. I've never, ever seen a house with gold screws. That's spectacular. And I'm curious, what specifically causes you to believe that a buyer is going to pay an extra $70,000 for gold screws that they can't see? How are we going to justify that to the buyer?
Because I'm not selling my house unless I get the $70,000 for my screws.
I'm sorry, because you're not what?
I'm not going to sell my house unless I get the $70,000 for my screws. That's the price I want.
I got it. I totally get that you want an extra $70,000. And when you bought this house, did it have gold screws?
No.
Or did you put them in?
I put them in.
You put them in. So just so I'm clear, what was so important to you about having a house with gold screws?
Because it means the house is built really, really strongly, and it's not going to cave in after a storm.
Got it. So what if, so I got that having the house be very strong is important to you. What if the buyer, what if you can't get $70,000 for the gold screws? What if there's no buyer that understands the value of gold screws? And you're not going to get $70,000 for extra. You're not going to get $70,000 above market, or we can't get an appraisal for $70,000 above market because of the screws. Are you going to give up on your dream of moving to Colorado?
It's your job to make sure I get it.
Well, it's my job to get you as much money as humanly possible. We still need to have a buyer who's willing to pay it, an appraiser who's willing to appraise it.
Then I wouldn't sell it.
So then you're not going to sell.
Right.
Okay. So I guess, so what I'm hearing you say, forgive me for being so blunt, it sounds to me like these gold screws are more important than watching your grandkids grow up in Colorado?
Yeah, I'll work something else out.
I'll
do something else. I'll visit them a couple times a year. Yeah, if I can't get my money, I'm not selling.
Okay. So
wait for the market to get better.
Okay, and if the market goes up $70,000 and you can get this price of $670,000 and the market goes up 10% in a year and $670,000 becomes a valid price, are you going to expect an extra $70,000 a year from now? Or $670,000 is the magic number?
670 is the magic number.
Okay. So just so I'm clear, what's important about this magic number 670? I mean, screws aside, tell me about the 670.
It covers all my costs.
It covers all your costs. Okay. And if you got 660, could you still move to Colorado?
No, I really need 670.
Okay. And if you got 665, would you still, I mean, if somebody came in and said, I'll give you 665, you can still make the move?
Yes.
Would you consider it, or 670 is the floor?
No, I would do it for 5,000, but not one penny less.
Okay. So as a real estate broker, it's up to me to decide if I want that listing, and it's up to me to decide if I want that client. And if somebody's really, so everybody else listening, I want you to consider that this
what we're hearing is we're hearing her replicate a really challenging client. And
awesome.
I'm going to say that clients are not always this challenging, but this is just something that you struggle with. And
yeah.
So the example of the gold screws is kind of irrational, yet it's an irrational client that you're struggling with. So most clients are not this irrational.
Well, what
and
I ask
a few questions and work
the
way around.
Blind items, like things that the buyer's not going to see, like in, you know, a new HVAC system
yeah.
or, you know, skimming the walls or something that costs a lot of money, that buyers just aren't going to see the value.
Well, and so that's exactly what I did. How's the buyer going to realize that there's an extra $70,000 in value in this house because the screws are gold plated? Right? And if the seller says, I don't give a crap about the buyer, I want my money back, I'm just going to keep asking questions.
Okay.
Right? Have you ever bought, I see that you have a brand new car in the driveway. Have you ever bought a used car, ever?
Me personally,
keep
no.
role playing with me if you would. Yeah, have you ever bought a used car? Ever?
Yes.
Yes. So the people that bought that car first, they bought it for full price, and you bought it 3 years later for about half price. Are they going to get their value back?
No.
When you sell that beautiful Mercedes in the driveway, I'm guessing you paid about 70 or 80 grand for that, and you sell it in 3 or 4 years, are you going to get your value back?
No, but real estate's different.
Well, real estate sometimes is different. Sometimes we get values back that we don't. When you bought this house, didn't you tear some stuff out? You upgraded the kitchen, didn't you?
Yep.
The people who put in the last kitchen, you tore all that stuff out. So did they get their value back?
Okay.
My concern for you is you hired me to help get you to Colorado to be with your grandkids. And your house is worth exactly what the market will pay. Your house is worth what my job is to get as many people to see it as possible and find the one buyer who will pay the most. When you bought this house, did you care how much the seller paid for it?
No.
Did you care how much the seller had invested in it?
No.
Did you care how much the seller owed against it?
No.
What did you care about?
That I liked the house.
That you liked the house. And then you not only did you like the house, you compared this house to other houses sort of like it and thought, for this price, it's about right. I'm willing to pay this for that because I've looked around and this is kind of how it stacks up in the market. I think that the price is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay, and don't you think the buyers are going to do exactly the same thing today? They're going to look at what's out there and compare yours to everything else, and they're going to find one that they love. It's my job to get lots and lots and lots of them to come see this and find the one who's willing to pay the most. And just like you, when you bought this house, they don't care how much you owe or how much you want. They're going to pay what they think is fair. And you and I don't get to decide that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Great. Are you still committed to move to Colorado to watch your grandchildren grow up?
Yes.
Perfect. All right, then let's look again at the comparables and see how much we can reasonably ask for the price that will still get you moved. Are you willing to do that?
Yes.
Awesome. Let's do that again.
Okay, great. Thanks, Joel.
All right, so everybody else listening, notice I didn't tell her much. I said, what about this? How did you choose that? Where did this price come from? And how did you get that price? So she, I think it was you, hit the nail on the head early. They don't listen to reason. Yeah, they don't listen at all. However, if I ask really good questions, I can kind of force them into thinking. If I tell them stuff, they don't listen. The only person that they listen to is themselves. So our job is to ask really good questions to cause them to listen to themselves. They're going to answer their own questions. All right, and according to my clock, we're a few minutes over time, so sorry about that. I'm on Hawaii time, and I'm moving kind of on Hawaii time. So thank you all for being here, as usual. And
another week of objection handling next week, and then we're going to wrap it all up the final week. So have an awesome, awesome week. Our website is back up and running. Shoot me an email if I can be of service to you. And as usual, go have an awesome week, and I'll talk to you all next time.
Mahalo, Joel.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.